Today's show, we talk about Dion and Shador and social media battles, aggregation of content, the latest in the house case, more scholarships for Olympic sports, and some serious crime down there in Pinellas County, Florida.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
We're doing everything here. Running pods, winning derbies. You got it.
Russ Dellinger.
Shocking that this chicken throwing wasn't their first real fight.
And SI's Pat Forty.
If she brings home Popeyes, we're fine. We don't have a problem here.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Pat reports that he's sobered up since the derby, which is good. I'd like to congratulate my namesake, Mystic Dan.
Namesake. Did you bet it?
I should have. I think I earned that nickname one weekend in Reno, but I'm there's a non-disclosure agreement I can't discuss any of the details of that.
It's actually the Mystic with a K because it's a paint that somebody connected with the owners had a paint store or something, and there was a Mystic paint that now is. That's the name of the damn horse.
Listen, we're doing everything here. Running pods, winning derbies. You got it.
Yeah,
is that's not going to be one of your hated names, is it, Pat?
No. I mean, I don't love it, but, it can't get on a list with wool sandals yet.
Okay. All right. Good. I want to go back. We touched a little on this story, but I thought it was kind of apropos of more of additional a bit of where we're at in college football and society in general. And that was the father-son social media duo of the Sanders of Boulder, Colorado, Dion and Shador, last week getting into it on Twitter with former Buffalo players and just various people, basically Xavier Smith, who was one of the guys who transferred out. So I found this whole thing very interesting because Max Olson of the Athletic, he's a great reporter and writer. He did a story where he talked to or tried to reach out and talk to every one of the players who left Colorado last year after Hurricane Dion came in and was just, had the meeting, the Louis meeting. I'm bringing my Louis and then basically cut everybody in this mass fashion. What happened to these guys? What was this scene like? And the story in The Athletic was very, very well done. It was balanced. It was interesting. It had all sorts of nuggets about just the whole time frame. A lot of perspective on, what Coach Prime was doing was not unusual. It was just unusual in that he videotapes the meetings and was more cutthroat about it. But every new coach comes in and they're going to run some people off, or you don't fit with us, you're not good enough, this, that, the other thing. Happens everywhere. But as everything with Prime, it's done in a bigger way. And so, where'd these guys go? So he had all the stats, 15 transferred to Power 5 programs, 22 ended up on Group of 5 rosters, 11 went FCS or D2, 2 went to JUCO, and 3 just never played again, which suggests that the scouting wasn't all that inaccurate. Additionally, of the 37 who went to FBS schools, so the 15 that went to Power 5 and the 22 that went to Group of 5, 23 of those guys never even started a game last year. So, again, we're not talking like he was throwing really good players out or this or that. Again, he inherited a 111. Anyway, the whole story has got, I thought, a lot of balance. I don't know if you guys read it. It was really well done. And we'll just start with this because I thought that if you guys did read it, that it was a pretty fascinating look into what I think was a extremely unique time frame. The players that he talked to, most of them were like, some of them were like, yeah, this wasn't going to be for me, or this wasn't the right spot for me. Oh, I'm so much happier at this spot, or I wish he had been a little more polite about it, but whatever. I didn't think it was an anti-Deion Sanders story in any way.
No, I agree. I mean, I think it was just basically an accounting and it, you know, from a very personal level for a lot of these guys of here's what happened and here's where they went. And yeah, it was an unprecedented roster makeover, but it was an incredibly bad roster, as you pointed out. And this does happen. It is more open. It is more blunt. You could certainly, if you want to, say that Deion only cares about people who are going to help him. You could maybe get a little bit of that feeling, like, you know, I'm sorry, you got to go, and I'm not going to sugarcoat this because I don't have to. So that's the cold nature of college football at a high level, and has been for quite a while. It's just this was more dramatic in terms of scale. And maybe the communication of the way it went down and then obviously the publicity surrounding it. Deion, look, not for everyone, and continues to do things in a different way that can be abrasive, can seem petty. But they brought him in to break the system and rebuild, you know, something there. And this is part and parcel of it. And As you alluded to, Dan, the destinations for these guys were pretty indicative of the roster that he inherited.
Well, and you know, if anything, the story sure did catch the attention of a one Deion Sanders in the quotes in it, in his, as Dan said, in his sons as well, proceeded to attack, maybe attack's a strong word, but certainly aggressively respond to on Twitter, on social media, to some of those who I think delivered those quotes to Max in the Athletic story about how the exit went and how the conversations went with Deion. It's probably frustrating from a PR standpoint, working at some of these schools, when you have coaches that now give even more voice to these stories and more attention to it. I think I don't understand they're frustrated, but all it does is kind of backfire on them. It's, you know, there's one thing when a story, and it was a well done story, and it was kind of a fascinating, like a great idea to track down all these players and, you know, and hear what they have to say. But when a story, you know, ignites the fire of the person at the center of the story, then it obviously struck a chord and thus has a lot of truth to it. Right. I don't think anybody's doubting it, but it certainly provided, to me at least, provided the reaction of Deion and his sons kind of provided more fuel to the story and gave it even more justification, you know, for it to be written.
Yeah. So I think my guess, I don't know, is that neither Prime nor Shador nor most of the people read the story. Certainly not in reaction to what the aggregation of the story was. And I think if you read the whole story, there's incredible amounts of context that are brought to the story. And I felt a little for Max, I don't want to overplay it, but like when you're writing a story, it's like creating a dinner. It's creating a meal. And you have a little bit of this and you have a little bit of that. And you have balance. And you have, if you just sit there and go and pluck out, oh, you had a spicy, I don't like spicy jalapeno pickled, you know, pickles or something on a sandwich. Or I don't like those. Those are too spicy. Like, yeah, but they're on a sandwich and they're covered. We balance the meal. We go real Bobby Flay here. Like, you can't just pull one entity out of the meal and then declare the meal to be something it isn't. Even the quotes here from Xavier Smith. So Xavier Smith was a guy here, and he does not get quoted until the 33rd paragraph of this story, which is a lot of paragraphs, more paragraphs than most people read. And he has a, he tells his story of going in and his dad being like, hey, be optimistic. But he's like, I didn't see these guys looking at me much during, I felt like a background character. And he gives two quotes, but he's disappointed he's getting cut because he really wanted to make it work at for Coach Prime. He really wanted to play for him. And he says, I was actually getting mad, like tears coming to my eyes, because, bro, you never tried to get to know me. So he kind of felt in that moment that he wasn't getting a fair shake. But then he said he wasn't shocked he was cut, given his injury history. He'd broken his right leg during senior season of high school. Again, in the spring, he only played one game in 2022. There was no tape for him, right? He was finally healthy. He was trying to give it his shot. His dad loved Deion Sanders. He felt this kind of pressure when Deion walked in on the Louis thing. He got fired up, was like, I'm going to be one of the guys that makes it, all this stuff. And then he said the meeting, he said specifically only to the meeting, he said he was destroying guys' confidence and belief in themselves. The way he did it, it could have been done with a little more compassion. I would suggest probably even Prime believes that. But they were cutting like 30 guys in a day. So he ends up at Austin Peay. That's where he ends up. No one else at FBS wants him. FCS. Or FBS. I'm sorry. I always get these supers confused. He does a good job at Austin Peay. And then his coach goes to UTEP. He follows him. He's now a transfer at UTEP. But this is not a, by any account, anybody sitting there saying, yeah, we want you as a Big 12 a football player, right? There's been two opportunities for the other schools in the Big 12 to recruit him. Nobody has. And I don't think he's even suggesting. He's just happy where he's at, getting to play football now. He's looking forward to going back to Group of Five level UTEP. But those two quotes that he had get pulled out of the story because those are the most interesting, salacious quotes. And this is where we're at in media these days. I'm not lamenting it. It's just where we're at. But the aggregation has always been a fear for writers because whatever you wrote get condensed. The context is usually lost, and you're at the mercy of the opinion of the aggregator. And they've been aggregating stories for a long time. Now with social media aggregation, there's almost no context.
Yeah. Right. Dan, you should definitely lament it.
Well, it sucks. But lament. There isn't much we can do.
Lament. It's absolute. Yeah. That's what it is. I'll lament it.
It happens on everything, right? This is a passage from a book. This is a passage from a radio show. It's a passage from TV. There's a 5-second clip of someone saying something stupid. It's like, but you missed the other 2 minutes. There's no context to anything that's going on social media, and everyone just reacts to what's out there. Now, in this case, and there are literally accounts now to people who aren't in media on how this works. TikTok, Twitter, for sure. You can be paid. They have a fund where you sign up and you get paid. I get paid a little bit on your engagement with your tweets, engagement with your TikToks. Well, the way to get engagement is to throw out the most wild stuff. Could be questions, could be plucking one quote. These accounts who often don't really ever identify themselves as any to a single person, right? You're not going to Max Olson, athletic college football reporter who has years of experience and a present and, you know, is accountable and has sources and, you know, you can call them up if Deion Sanders, these are just kind of like these things, right? They have them in NFL and college football, particularly NBA. And all they're trying to do is drag up engagement, get everyone screaming, retweeting. Look at this unbelievable quote. Look at this. And they get paid. It's the business model. The business model is not to inform you of anything that actually happened. It is to enrage you one way or the other. And so that's what they do. Now, in this case, Max got done in by his own people. The Athletic his own site aggregated these two quotes, again, that didn't appear until the 33rd paragraph. If it was the most important quote, it would be in the third paragraph, right? It's the 33rd paragraph. So they set it up. This will engage. Now, the Athletic account is probably not trying to make money that way. I don't know what's going on. But it's designed like, hey, get people to read the story. But nobody actually goes and reads the story. And maybe some people do. I don't know. I don't know whether it worked or not. But it says Deion Sanders recommended Xavier hit the transfer portal like many others. He didn't. During spring practice, Smith felt more like an extra in a background of a reality show. Frustration set in before he left for Austin Peay. And then they have the quotes. I was actually getting mad, like tears coming out of my eyes because, bro, you never even tried to know me. Again, so they pull these two quotes. Well, this catches the eye of Shador Sanders. And Shador Sanders, perhaps he read the entire story. Perhaps he did. I don't know. But he puts out, I didn't even remember him, to be honest. Bro had a very mid, had to be very mid at best. So he takes a shot at Xavier Smith, and off we go. And it ends up with Deion. There's Lord Jesus, he says. And there's all sorts of response to, guys are trying to defend him and say, look, the guy's a good player. He's going to do well. He did really well at Austin Peay. And it's a mocking. And now we've got Shador Sanders, Deion Sanders fighting with this guy who went to Austin Peay and then UTEP. And it becomes this huge thing. And I guess we're going to say that. I mean, I think we discussed, like, Prime can do whatever the heck he wants, but I don't know why the heck you're fighting with people on social media. And Shador can do anything he wants, but he's trying to become a number one pick in the NFL draft. And this will be asked at his little meetings coming up next spring. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe it does, but that isn't what the NFL is looking for, is a guy trashing former teammates. He's kind of got this circus, Pat.
Yeah, I mean, what this is punching down publicly, I think it's kind of off-putting for sure. Like, you're picking fights with a dude who's at UTEP and was at Austin Peay, and for what reason? You didn't like something he said in a story? That reveals a controlling nature to a degree, maybe, with the Sanders family of, we will control the message, and if you are putting out any part of a message we don't like, there's going to be trouble. The wise play, obviously, here is to let Xavier Smith have his say and move on without getting into a Twitter squabble. Deion certainly should know better, but Shador should at this point too. To your point, you want to be an NFL quarterback? You want to be a Heisman Trophy contender? You might want to skip this stupid little squabble and, you know, think a little bit harder before you get into a Twitter fight. I just think that's just a very bad look for both Deion and his son at a time when they've already got enough things going on there. We've got to see what kind of product they're going to put on the field in the fall. And is it going to be better than last year? Is it going to be worse? You know, the program has been through such churn and such flux. I think maybe stick to the task at hand there.
Yeah, punching down is a good way to – that's how it feels. You basically cut a kid, you know, and he goes to FCS, which maybe may kind of justify the fact that you cut him. But then, and I know he spoke out, but just let it be. I have a problem with this myself sometimes in the social media age of ignoring things on social media. It is. It's hard. It can be hard, but this is a case where just ignore as best you can. But as Dan mentioned, the problem with ignoring it is that the virality of it, because quotes and things are getting pulled out into a single, as Dan mentioned, aggregation. That's a good point of when you write a story cooking a dinner, right? You're making an appetizer and a variety of things for the entree with sides and then maybe a dessert. And my dinner is usually in with a cocktail, Dan. But it's almost like, you know, this age in quote journalism, if you want to call the aggregation that, it's like you pulled out just one little thing of the dinner, right? Whether it's the side of green beans or the post-dinner cocktail, and you're just having that. No. You should have everything together, and then it fits and makes a lot more sense. But we don't do that as much anymore. And there are sites in accounts that only basically aggregate and sensationalize things and pull out. We've all had it done. Dan, me, and Pat, I know, have had it done where you know, the eighth paragraph or 20th paragraph or 50th paragraph of a story is pulled out, or a sentence is pulled out and blown up into a headline. Well, if we thought it should have been a headline, we would have written it that way. We didn't, right? Because you need all the context. You need the other things that you've cooked in this dinner. It's frustrating. It's been like, now I'm on a rant, right, Dan? It's a good
go
job.
Ahead. Way to go get ahead. Rolling. Do it.
It's just been really frustrating as a journalist when these things happen. And I think this is a great example of it happening, right? Pull quote, you know, blast out. And I get we want people to read our stuff and read stories. But it's just, I guess it's the way it is now, you know, and it's what social media is, and just gotta, it is what it is, as they say. So moving on.
See, our listeners, though, are smart enough to avoid this. They need to know.
Right, that's right. Sure. Yeah.
Nuanced, deep. They want all the context, no doubt about it. We don't have any too long didn't read people that listen to this podcast. None.
No, and you have people rewarded for being dishonest. You know, I mean, you're financially reward when your business model is dishonesty. You see it in politics too. It's even more extreme, and I'm sure it drives people even crazier, because you'll see some quote and it'll be like basically everyone's screaming. Some politician basically said, let's murder all children. And you're like, wait, what? Like, I'm thinking probably not. And then you read that's not what it said, you know? Right. But somebody went with it. You look, you know, the Shador Sanders response had 18 million views on Twitter. Right. The Athletic story did not have 18 million views. So, you know, there it is. Now, there's another angle to this. It's always like, the Sanders, I kind of like, keep doing it. It's May 6th. Keep doing it, Shador. I don't know. You're going to get drafted high enough. You'll make it in the NFL. But really, the thing about this is they kind of had the last laugh. Like, look at, man, you went to Austin Peay. Now you're going to UTEP. Nobody else wants you. You're probably a nice guy, whatever. There were some things, though, that like also interesting in this, because I just to get to the base of the story, 51 of the transfers that Colorado signed, 35 of them are gone. They hit on what, a third, 16 of
a little
51.
Less than a third. Yeah.
The average recruiting hit rate, probably.
Yeah.
Days,
right. You know? So I mean, all the guys, the new Louis they brought in to get, I'm not saying the old Louis was any good, because like we said, that was Canal Street, New York City, Louis. You got it for $8 for a reason. Right. You got it cheap, looked a little shady. Maybe that guy in the street corner wasn't really a licensed Louis Vuitton dealer, but you know, who could tell in that moment? Why wouldn't they just be there? Just, anyway,
you know, pulling it out of the trunk of a car here.
Right.
Yeah. The guy in Canal Street used to sell Rolexes. He called them low Lexes.
Low Lexes. Yeah. Does Gucci have one C or two? I don't know. Something. How do you spell that? The third C is silent. So 35. So, you know, you can make two arguments. Well, they shouldn't have brought in all these guys. These guys didn't work. Well, neither did the others. Would they have been better off, like, saying to looking at a Xavier Smith, saying, hey, maybe we can develop him into something? Maybe, maybe not. But the truth was, the undeniable truth is Deion Sanders walked into a total disaster at Colorado. Like, I mean, it is bad when nobody, your whole roster, you threw out most of your roster and only like 15 of them even started a game anywhere the next season. And some of them started three games and then were like got replaced. Was it 14 guys? So, I mean, you know, this is a bad, this is a massive overhaul any which way you do it. But Bud Elliott of Cover 3 Podcast, 24/7 Sports, all that, does he's good with some like spin it forward ideas, right? So he says he puts out this question: is there a method to the madness here by the Sanders company? Was it just a momentary lapse in judgment brought on by emotion, or assuming there was a greater purpose, what was the purpose? And he says, I suspect it was roster retention. While it has two high-level starters, Colorado's depth may be worse than the Power Five. It's hard to get by, try to get guys to transfer in and be backups. I think making fun of guys who leave on Twitter saying you tossed them out like used furniture is meant to retain the remaining guys. It works because it fosters an us versus them mentality. The implication is they weren't good enough to be part of the program. Though several of the guys who left and got made fun of are way better than the backups Colorado brought in and had to rely on. It also plays to the social media clout. Colorado's heavily imaged in social media. They do it better than anyone else. Having prominent figures with millions of followers make fun of you if you leave is a deterrent, especially those who are drawn to Colorado in the first place. So, love the good job, Bud Elliott. Finding a, I mean, that is some high-level content creation. Finding a third argument in a May story. Pros pro right there. Was it just emotion, or were the Sanders thinking this through and saying, I dare you to leave? Prime and Shador are going to pounce on you on social media.
I love Bud Elliott. I don't know. I don't know. You know, I mean, maybe there's deep thinking there, right? Another layer to this. I don't know. I think it was the Sanders and company a little hurt, maybe in thus lashing out. But who knows? You know, prime time. Maybe he's thinking on another level than all of us.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say it's impossible that, I mean, there is a little, there's kind of a omerta vibe there, you know, a little bit of don't go against the family. And so possibly that was, you know, they're trying to enforce an ethos and make sure the point gets across, but well, it's kind of weird. I don't know. Yeah, that might be overthinking it, but
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, I thought you guys would bite on that.
No. No, Dan. Not
I think today. It was Shador probably just seeing the thing, yeah. I probably agree. All right, well, it was worth a try. I'd like to think there was a method to the madness. They do have to keep them. See, the original plan was you got all these guys, and then they were stuck. They couldn't leave if they did well. And now we have right. Unlimited transfers. Yeah. But you also were going to get stuck with all these guys that maybe weren't any good. So, I don't know. Dangerous game. We will see what happens up there in Boulder. We'll be back after this message. All right, Ross, we have more developments in this proposed settlement in the House case that could just pretty much be the most significant change to how college athletics works since the birth of college athletics, I would say. And that includes a group declaring themselves the College Football Players Association, stepping up and saying they want to make a deal. I have no idea where they gather this power, but good on them to jump in. Third party middlemen are kind of the it's a tradition in college sports.
Yeah.
Might as well get in on that action and carve in.
We hear from more of them than about anybody.
Yeah. A lot of third-party guys have figured out. But anyway, what is the latest on some of the negotiations since our last discussion?
Yeah, I think we last talked on Wednesday. And so Thursday evening, we had kind of an update with more actual details in maybe the real reason that things are accelerating in that new models are starting to get socialized with in athletic director and even university president meetings. And that is because plaintiff's attorneys about a week and a half ago or so put a deadline on college athletic leaders to agree to this potential settlement. The deadline's about 45 days from when it was originally given. That was the deadline, about 45 days. So basically the end of May, you know, first week of June appears to be kind of the deadline that plaintiff attorneys want an answer from college leaders on if they're going to make this settlement, agree to the settlement or not. So some of the latest details, because again, the settlement is twofold, right? It would be back pay damages to athletes for the loss of their NIL based on TV broadcast, based on their NIL name, image, and likeness being used on TV broadcasts from 2017 through 2020, the 4 years before the maximum by law, 4 years is the most you can go for back damages. So before the NIL was a thing. So there's that, and that's about $2.8 to $2.9 billion that will have to be back paid. It'll come from NCAA distribution, of course, right? I don't know where else it could come from, right? In NCAA distribution, it'll come out of the school's pockets. You know, Power Four schools are estimating that over the next 10 years, each year they'll have to, the NCAA will withhold around $2 to $3 million in distribution to pay that back pay. They have insurance too that'll cover some of that. So that takes care of some details around the back pay. Forward pay now, right? Because any settlement will have to, as we've long discussed here on the pod for months now, any settlement is going to have to be a future athlete compensation model will have to be part of any settlement. And we kind of know how that model looks now. We're starting to get more information as it's further socialized with athletic directors and university presidents. We're starting to get a little grasp on that model. The first concept, as we discussed a little bit, it's been known for a while now, there'll be some kind of revenue sharing, and there'll be some kind of cap on that revenue sharing. That it'll be an annual cap. I think we discussed the number 20 million has floated around. I think in our latest story, we kind of gave a range of 17 to 22 million because this cap will fluctuate. It will, depending on averages, it will fluctuate. And the cap is based around certain revenue streams within an athletic department, and those revenue streams will change through the 10 years. So it'll be like a rolling average, and that number will change. But you know, it'll be in between that range of 17, 22, 23, could even get higher the later it goes. So that's one concept of a new model. The other one is something that really had not been reported at all in our story Thursday, is about the expansion of scholarships in the implementation of roster limits. This was something that was discussed 2 years ago in the NCAA Transformation Committee. They wanted to basically lift all the NCAA restrictions around scholarship limits. That's not exactly what's happening. But
you mean the number that a school can offer per team?
Per sport, right. Per sport. So like, let's take the example of baseball is probably the best example to take. Baseball
11.
It's an NCAA maximum of 11.7 scholarships to spread over 32 players. I think the total roster in baseball is more like 40 or 45.
Yeah, it's up there.
Yeah, and so you only get 11.7 scholarships. So what will happen is, again, using baseball as an example, is they'll come up with a roster limit for baseball. Say they'll bring it down a little and say 40 or 35. Well, schools will be able to have the opportunity to provide scholarships to all roster spots, though 35 or 40 if the roster limit is 40. So you have a roster limit for each sport, and schools will have the choice where they want to expand scholarships for that sport for every roster spot.
Why do they want to do that?
So, what's that?
This is where I have questions too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, why is that your question? Would they want to do this?
My question there is, like you've just said, we're going to buy the most expensive home possible, and we're leveraging ourselves significantly to buy that. Oh, but I also would like to buy a Gulfstream 5 private jet. So let's do that at the same time.
What are you doing?
Taking on this massive added expense when you're already taking on these other massive added expenses.
Cut the scholarship limit.
Well, I think that's a good question. I think there are a variety of ways you could answer that. If you have spots, if you're sharing revenue with athletes, and you have walk-on spots, then you could share the revenue, conceivably, right? You could share the revenue with those walk-ons, and thus just give them a scholarship that way. So I guess this is a way around to say, you know, to say we're gonna just have full scholarships, and then the revenue on top of that. I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
but
you're trying. Okay, they have to pay these players. This is coming, right? They have proposed 20% of their revenue should go to the players. Now they got no shot at stopping at 20%.
No, it's 20. Yeah, it's 22. It's 22% of the main revenue streams of ticket sales, TV rights.
Okay, so it's not even all their revenue.
It's not it's not donations, right?
Right, right. 22%. It's going to be under in pro sports. It's 50% minimum.
Yeah, right.
So I mean, it's nice of you to say here have 20%. That's not going to last when the Teamsters get involved. When Jeffrey Kessler's running your thing. But you have to do this. We know this is going to cost a chunk of money, even in their wildest dreams. Let's say you have a $100 million athletic department. You got 20 teams. You got to now give $20 million to the players in some form, whatever. It's all going to football and basketball. It's going a little bit to everybody. You are now $20 million down. Why in the world would you then say, we got to make this work with only $80 million now? Let's increase the number of players that we're giving more money to additionally via the scholarship, because the scholarship is compensation. Also, it's part of the compensation process. So why in the world would you increase your spending on sports that are either doing fine at the 11 limit or whatever limit you have? A, B, you want to add scholarships. You now have to add scholarships in for both men and women to try to comply with Title IX. And you're going to, this makes zero sense to me.
I think there's a few answers. Number one is what I started to talk about is that you could circumvent, right, the walk-on thing, which is happening now because walk-ons are getting NIL. They're just getting their scholarship paid. So they already have a scholarship through NIL. So I think, part of the negotiations is you got to give all these spots a full scholarship anyway. You can't just share revenue with them and pay them for their tuition. Just give them the full scholarship anyway. Number two, I think the power leagues, like the SEC, for instance, has for years clamored to expand scholarships in certain sports, specifically baseball. Right, and give more than 11.7. So some of them want to do this, right? They want to give more scholarships. Number three, who knows, at the negotiating table, Dan, this may have been the plaintiff's lawyers saying, this is restricting athletes. You're restricting the amount of scholarships that can be distributed, and you have to do more. So I don't know which one of those three. Maybe it's a combination of all three. But that's kind of where we are. And you're right. It could be very expensive. It was in kind of totaled some numbers in my story on Thursday. I talked to two Power Four athletic directors who both plan to expand scholarships dramatically. One says he's going to spend $9 million extra on scholarships a year, and one city's going to spend $10 million additional on scholarships a year. Because like Dan, you mentioned, when you add men's scholarships, you have to add women. So if you're going to add 10, 15, 20 scholarships for baseball, you needn't have to go over to a women's sports and add similar or the same amount. So it can be very cool. When all totaled up, you know, it's going to be at least, you know, it depends on a school, because schools, again, this is permissive as well. Just like the revenue sharing cap, you don't have to get to the cap necessarily, right? You could choose to go halfway there, a third of the way there, whatever. Just like this is just
Sacramento
like that,
Kings. Right? Sacramento Kings have made a lot of money through the years. So a cap? What is that? We don't. We don't know.
And same thing with the scholarship. There's kind of a cap. The cap of the scholarships is a roster limit, but you don't have to get all the way there.
This still seems like a horrible idea. But go ahead, Pat.
Yeah. So I like putting this on. We're going back to fifth grade here. But so if this is possibly being compelled upon the schools by Kessler et al. Like they're telling them, this is going to be part of the deal. You've got to increase scholarship limits or we're taking the deal off the table.
Well, that could be a part of it. But I think if you look back 2 years ago, we all remember the Transformation Committee. They did this. The NCAA Transformation Committee suggested this model. And it was because the power leagues wanted it. They argued they wanted, they have more money. They wanted to provide the scholarships. They wanted to provide more scholarships. They argue that in Transformation Committee meetings.
It's amazing. But and yes, I've heard the argument about baseball scholarships for two decades, right?
Yeah.
How many schools are we talking about there? Like a dozen? You think in Michigan, Michigan State, Indiana, Purdue care about having more scholarships for baseball? Hell no. Maybe they want them for hockey or something.
Who the hell cares if the baseball guys get a scholarship or not? Who? Well, I don't understand this at all.
Well, the SEC does, right?
Let me tell you what.
That's it.
They are fools for going down this road.
Pretty much every SEC team is going to increase their scholarships.
Right, right. That'll give them the advantage. Right. But
I mean, it'll. Now, I don't know about everybody else.
Cutting.
I
think they should be cutting.
So that's kind of the fascinating part of all of this, is the revenue sharing and the expansion of scholarships. Is schools, a lot of schools, maybe outside of the top 3, 5, 10, are not resourced enough to do this in every sport. So they're going to have to pick and choose of what they really want to support through revenue sharing and expansion of scholarships and what they don't. And that's going to be interesting moving forward, and do the sports they don't want to support as much, do they completely cut them, or they just leave the scholarships as is and don't share as much revenue with them? I don't know. It's going to be some hard decisions, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, we're heading towards additional kind of Darwinism here of grants and aid or programs that you sponsor as a university. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And
apparently there is. I mean, look at how I just can't get over the idea that you have you have $100 million in obligation. You now only have $80 million, and that is your wildest freaking dreams. And you say, hey, let's make our obligation $110 million. Right. I mean, like, I don't want to go Dave Ramsey on us here, but what, like, are you guys crazy? No, the idea they should be doing is rallying and getting together and saying, this is what we have to do. There's no scholarships in baseball. Nobody gets a scholarship nationwide. Zero. The recruiting and the balance of power in the sport is unlikely to change that much. Maybe some, because the smaller schools are able to like offer a full ride to a certain player. But generally speaking, in a smaller if you just have no scholarships in the SEC, it just gets down to recruiting. Now you're getting you get a third or four. We talked about this last podcast. Is a little bit more money matter in a decision on a baseball scholarship, on a swimming scholarship with Pat's kids? No, they wanted to go where they wanted to go. They were getting something. So you give them something in a different manner. but you get rid of all the scholarships. Mac, the Mac won't change. Even the SEC won't change. Kids say, well, I want it. Most of these kids going to college on athletic scholarships, I believe, can afford. Their families have spent more than college tuition just getting them good enough to get the quote partial scholarship to get a spot on the team. Remember when Hartford was going to drop from Division I to Division III and everyone screamed it's a horrible decision for the school? Was it? They added all those same athletes, but now they're paying full freight. It was a good move for the school because it wasn't like Hartford Athletics was, you know, there's value in Alabama football, Tennessee football, but, and there's value in Tennessee baseball too. But I would be trying to get no scholarships for anybody, and I would just pay my football. That's how I would do it. I don't know what these guys are coming up with.
Well,
someone's going to have to call me. I'm going to get some calls, but man, you guys are crazy.
I think, first of all, I mean, yes, we did talk about this, that I would not be shocked, especially in men's sports, if they go non-scholarship but retain a varsity sport. But I you can't paint with a completely broad brush here. You know, I'm sure they're
it's my specialty, Pat. That is my specialty.
He only carries broad brushes.
Right off the cliff. That's my whole thing. I don't have to have any repercussions. I run a podcast. Come on, man.
Let me get out the smaller brush and paint the corners and say track and field, wrestling, probably some softball and baseball players may not be able to afford to go to school without a scholarship. And in baseball, you're gonna probably drive people to the minor leagues in baseball.
All right, let me provide one note.
World needs
here.
Ditch diggers too.
here we go.
A portion of the additional scholarship expense. So a portion of, like, if a school expands its scholarships by $5 million annually, let's say, a portion of that counts toward the revenue sharing cap. That's at least the negotiations right now.
That's what they're hoping for. They're not negotiating with anybody yet.
All of it, like all that $5 million doesn't. It's just a portion of it can count toward the revenue sharing. One other thing, things are being reduced, right? So roster limits are going to be reduced in certain sports, specifically football. There will be a reduction in roster limits. That's the expectation in the models that have been socialized, is a reduction in football.
It's not 120 roster
limits.
Roster.
Not 100. Yeah, I think it's 120. I think it just moved to 120 for preseason camp. You can expect that to drop. You know, I think that the number that I hear is continuing to fluctuate on what a roster limit will be for football. But you know, you basically, you might not have as many walk-ons, right?
For football. This is all not
God,
that important.
God forbid.
But I don't believe, I'm opposed to all of this. Who cares how many people you got on the team? The colleges should be there to provide opportunity.
You were just arguing to reduce expenses. No, want people to have 140 players?
If you want to have 120 guys and you're feeding them or whatever, that's, if you're not paying their scholarship, it's like, okay, I worked at a student newspaper, right? There was no scholarship. Of course not. Does the actual, maybe not anymore, but does a student newspaper provide more value than some of the athletic teams to the university? Yeah, it actually did, right? Like, there were more kids on the working there. Is actual careers, not just journalism, but graphic design and photos and advertising sales. Also, it was way bigger deal. We didn't get anything. That's fine. Nobody ever thought to give anything like that. But what you wouldn't do is sit there and say, hey, let's say you're only allowed to have like 30 people work at the newspaper, but not fit. Like, who cares how many? Provide the opportunity to, you provide the stage, but some of these scholarships, I don't know why a kid gets a scholarship to get into some of these schools. They don't really, like, what's the point? It's a form of compensation that probably isn't necessary. And dividing up 11 spots out of 40 or 35, whatever, I would get rid, if I could do it, I would say no scholarships. We provide this incredible opportunity.
Well, the problem with that, I think,
your
that
favorite scares, sport here
that scares administrators is you if you completely like pull scholarships and then you're sharing revenue with athletes. I mean, that just opens the door for, oh, there really are employees now. You're not even giving them tuition and fees. Yeah. So yeah. It just gets closer and closer to like what most in college athletics believe is like this dark like tyrant in the corner, which is employment. Even though we do seem to be barreling toward that, they're trying to keep that at bay. And I think part of the pulling scholarships could move them even closer and closer to employment, especially if they're sharing revenue.
Yeah, that's a legitimate point there.
I guess anyway.
The a couple of like arguments that we could spend.
Don't act like these guys make good decisions. Okay,
well,
like
no.
My track record isn't too bad here. They've screwed this thing up for years, and now they're worried about baseball? I hope the back of our rotation gets a full ride. What? I don't care.
So, Dan, part of the there's been a little bit of sticker shock, you might say, when the new model is socialized in these meetings. And I think it's because when you look at the total numbers, it's pretty wild. We try to piece together that in our story on Thursday for these power schools and how much more they could spend, you know. And if you take a $18 to $20 million cap, you know, assuming that a school reaches that cap, then you throw in $2 to $3 more million withheld from NCAA distribution for the back damages. And then you throw in $5 to $10 million every year for additional scholarships because you got to keep up because your rivals expanding their scholarships as well. And you're looking at $25 to $30 million annually in extra distribution for a school to a cost, $25 to $30 million additional cost every year for a school, $300 million over the 10-year settlement, roughly. That's a lot of money. Where do you get the money? And we're starting to see some strategy, and we have seen for months administrators kind of brace for this moment. But it's something that's happening right now. I think is the mobilization of university boards and university president councils trying to get their hands on how they're going to come up with an extra $20 to $30 million every year. And I think there's a variety of ways that can be done, whether that's salary reductions or overall other expense reductions or finding revenue in new ways, naming rights to fields or stadiums that they've avoided to do. And then, of course, there's, you know, private equity or loans, payments from schools. It goes on and on of ways schools are starting to try to.
They're going
to
hit up
find,
the students is what they're going to try
cash.
To do. And if the school wants to do that, this is about the in the past. These decisions were just made. The money is the football player's money. Let's say we're going back to my $100 million athletic department, which is a pretty, I mean, like even Ohio State and those are only like 220. Those are the, you know, the biggest possible one. Let's say it's $100 million. And now you're spending $25 million. $25 million were spent. Well, it's even more than that, but the money's all coming in from football. The reason there's an SEC network and a Big Ten network is football. Yes, we can love all these other sports. I watched the lacrosse show last night. Like, I'm all for all these sports. I love college hockey, all the different things. But the reality is the money is coming in from football. And what they did was, without asking the players, they said, we're going to take your money that you earn and we're going to give it to all these other kids and all these administrators. Now they can't do that. So what they need to do is ask the school, look, if you find value in having a baseball team that is fully funded, then fund it. It's the same way if you decide, you know what, we want to have 35 chemistry scholarships for the best chem students we can find, then go ahead. That's what you fund. It's the university should make that thing. Right now, it's been has to go on to the athletic department, but the athletic department has done it without the will and consent of their earners. So if the school values having these teams, and maybe they do, then go ahead and do it. But then that's going to get passed down to the regular student who's already burdened with extremely high, tuition, room, board, all those types of things. It's expensive, obviously, everyone knows, to send you to go to college, send your kid to college, whatever it is. So those are real decisions at a university. What are we valuing? And I think the problem with athletics and what they fear is if you sit there and say, hey, should we all of a sudden use the general funds of this university to fund 20 new baseball scholarships? Or you go, wait a minute, why don't we do 20 new, molecular biology scholarships? Why don't we spend that money on a better, whatever. Like, you get into, are we here for academia? Or we're going to say, and some schools obviously have big fees for the students. They're paying so that their peers can go to college on a scholarship. So, I don't know.
Well, I'm relatively certain that there are certain departments at universities that are more attractive to bring in students, more lucrative than others, but the others still get funded by the university out of the general fund. Athletics has always operated under that general premise. There are certainly, football is more lucrative and more attractive, but the general athletic department funds are dispersed to keep the other sports viable as well. So I think you'd be asking schools to set up a business model for athletics that's different than what they do in terms of how they fund the rest of their academic arm.
We need a poetry major. Yes, I get it. I get it. It's not all business. Why do we have a poetry department? Because we do. Yeah, I hear you. But you're now arguing baseball, and argument. Look, I don't care if a school wants to have all of it. That's their decision. Before, right, the decision was made with no consent. It was just like, well, we got this extra money, let's add some teams.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I agree with you about, like, adding this scholarship expense to me just is completely insane. But unless it's being compelled upon them by the plaintiffs somehow. But, throw the decisions to the university proper and let them decide, okay, what do we want to do here? But for now, there are set NCAA limits for how many sports you need to sponsor to be in the FBS or to be in FCS or to be Division I versus Division II. If we're going to put all that on the table, that's just going to require another round of decisions that people are bad at making to figure out what future college sports is going to look like.
Well, the next step in all this, of course, as we've discussed quite a bit in the past, is some kind of collective bargaining. And to get back to what Dan mentioned about the College Football Players Association, as they announced today, and keep in mind the College Football Players Association has long discussed unionization, I think, in college athletics and collective bargaining in college athletics. And now we see in a statement Monday morning that they released that maybe they're okay with non-employment in doing collective bargaining under a non-employee type system, which probably is something that I think we discussed in the fall when Jack Swarbrick talked to me after a hearing up here in D.C. about a carve-out, a congressional carve-out that would allow athletes to collectively bargain without being employees. And now we see kind of a group that has been pushing, I think, employment unionization kind of back off of that a little bit. Is certainly interesting. Now, Dan mentioned, what is the College Football Players Association, right? Who are they in a way? You remember a couple years ago, they started a movement at Penn State. It kind of failed in the end, but I think they have been still very much active within college football programs, and I think they continue to be active. I think they continue to stump on the Hill and lobby on the Hill, and now they've kind of switched their stance. So it's noteworthy, it's notable that that's happened,
and good, and it's a good sign. If this becomes the the organization, that the players' organization, union or not union. We need some negotiations. All right. Enough of that. We got real situation here.
Uh-oh.
In a people's court.
Oh.
We got crime.
And the we're real back news.
In, yeah, we're back in Florida. Clearwater, Florida.
We're always in Florida.
A 20-year-old man is behind bars. This is the smoking gun. A 20-year-old man is behind bars charged with launching fried chicken at his sister during a domestic clash in the Florida residence they share. Fried chicken battery. Not batter, battery.
Okay.
According to investigators, the poultry pelting occurred Sunday afternoon in the Clearwater home of Kanye Medley and his sister. During a verbal altercation, Medley grabbed a bag of church's chicken from his sister and began throwing pieces of chicken at her. One piece of fried chicken hit the victim in the back and left debris of food on her shoulder. This is according to a police report, which I actually have. After being read his rights, Medley admitted throwing two pieces of chicken, one of which hit her. The explanation, defendants, he stated he did this. This is from the police report. He did this because he had not eaten and did not want the piece of chicken the victim offered him, so he became upset. So he was not he was hungry, but he was not going for any church's chicken, and was apparently upset that his sister would have the audacity to offer him church's chicken when he was hungry and not another meal. So he took it out by chucking the chicken at his sister and battery by getting hit by one of the pieces on the shoulder.
Mm, it must have hurt.
For you here. Punishment, is this like, are we over? I mean, it's a piece of chicken now. We've seen a lot more violent crime, usually people shooting each other over the Auburn, Alabama game. It's by our crime standards, pretty low. Would this have occurred if she had just brought home Popeyes, which I prefer?
Yes. Yeah.
Was it the church's part? Does churches have a brand issue here? Pat, Justice 40, what are your thoughts on this case of the fried chicken battery?
Yeah, well, yeah, thoughts and prayers with the woman as she recovers from this grievous injury, first of all. I'm sure it'll be a long and arduous rehab, and we certainly hope she pulls through. You took the thought right out of my mouth. If she brings home Popeyes, we're fine. We don't have a problem here. You know, bring better chicken. I'm looking now. I'm sure that like the spicy 8-piece feast is very nice. Maybe the cheddapeno biscuits, that might have helped alleviate some of the tension, you know.
Carload.
Yeah. All things considered, no, I think it was really rude and inconsiderate of her to bring substandard chicken back. And I am a little disappointed that the launch described doesn't involve like a launching, you know, like a rocket launcher or a slingshot or anything. It just, he just threw it. I was hoping for something a little more spectacular as his assault means, but no, I'm with the guy. It is on your sister for bringing in bad chicken. Case dismissed. He's absolved.
Dan, to Dan's point about Popeyes, you know, if you hit Popeyes chicken is so crispy. If you are actually hit with a Popeyes chicken leg, it could do some damage. I mean, it's that crispy, right? It could do some churches, though, maybe not as much. So I don't know.
So you're arguing the sharpness of the crisp could laceration.
Imagine
small laceration or something. Does it matter if it's a breast, a thigh, or a drumstick?
I think it does. I think it does matter. A drumstick could, you know, a Popeyes, a crispy golden fried Popeyes drumstick on your face, hit on your face from a distance could really, now you got a lawsuit, Dan. Now you got a lawsuit and a bruise, maybe a little cut too, you know, that crispy
Court of the
you do get
report.
A grease stain on your clothes,
you
right?
Definitely would have a grease stain. That's for sure. With any chicken, yeah. that's the case with any chicken.
Yeah,
for sure.
Brother and sister had a previous altercation, so this wasn't their first.
Shocking, they're not... yeah, shocking that this chicken throwing wasn't their first real fight. You know, like they've had words in the past, probably.
Yes, maybe they need to live apart. You don't have to continue living with your sister as you get older. Injuries to victim on the police report is not checked yes or no, and there was no check for medical treatment. However, I mean this sucks. Amount of bond he was given, no bond, really.
He couldn't even get out.
No. Now,
wow.
I understand this is domestic violence by the letter of the law. You can't throw anything, including chicken, at somebody. But I mean, kind of. Can you imagine sitting in the jail and you're with all the guys waiting trial on rape and murder and armed robbery and you're in for? My sister brought home church's chicken and I wanted Popeyes. So I hucked a thigh at her. She called the cops. Like, that's not it. Let me see your paperwork. That ain't it. Let me see your license. This is not what you're in for. No one's going to believe it. He's got to have this report or he's going to have a very hard time on the main line. Because no one's believing you're in there with no bond. No bond. My gosh.
Yeah, that's harsh. That's harsh.
They are not messing around in Pinellas County, Florida. Keep yourself on the straight and narrow if you're in Pinellas County. Because you just throw a piece of chicken. No bond. So. He's not under the influence of drugs, it says. No weapons were seized. Taking chicken in as evidence. The cops are like, we'll take the rest of that bag. I say free Kanye medley. I think this could be adjudicated outside of the, does not need to be in county. All right. That's our show. We appreciate everyone listening. Share us on social media. Continue to subscribe. And we will talk to you later this week.